Now, thirdly, we come to a much less popular method, which is known as the contemplation of impurity or decay. And this counteracts lust or craving or attachment. It's not a practice which many people care to take up, though it is popular in some quarters in the East. The first type of practice, there are three different ways of practicing it, but the first and the most radical, as it were, is to go to a graveyard or a burning ground, and in the East one gets these things, to sit there among the corpses and half-burned bodies. I know it sounds drastic, but then our craving is very strong. And just to sit there and look at these bodies one after the other and just think, well, this is what will happen to me one day. Oh, well, this is common sense, nothing of Buddhism here even. Just common sense. One day you'll be like that. One day your head will be off or your arm will be just lying to one side. You'll be a little heap of ashes in somebody's urn, cherished somewhere, we hope. But this is how you'll end. So why not face the fact? Why not admit it? And if necessary, orient one's life accordingly. So in the Eastern countries, very often, along goes the bhikkhu. I had almost said gaily, to the burning ground. And some of them do go, I will say, gaily, happily, and they sit. And they look at one corpse after another. This one just ready to be burnt, just dead. Another one, a bit swollen. Another one, well, in rather a mess. And they go on until they get to just a skeleton, a heap of bones, a heap of dust. And they just reflect. They turn over in their own mind, well, one day I too shall be like this. And it is a very salutary practice, and it does tend to cut down, to reduce craving or lust or attachment to the things of the body, the things of the senses, the things of the flesh. There's another way of practicing which is less drastic. That is simply contemplating death. Not going literally to the graveyard, which is rather radical, but just reminding yourself, reflecting on the fact that one day you must die. One day you must be separated, your consciousness must be separated from this physical organism. One day you will no longer see, you will no longer hear, you will no longer taste or feel or sense in any way. One day your body will just not be there. Your senses will not function. There will be a consciousness on its own. You don't know where, spinning perhaps bewildered in a sort of void. You don't know. So one must bear this in mind. Or, if even that's a bit too drastic, a bit too harsh, we'll just think about impermanence. Now autumn is beginning, it's a very beautiful time of year to think about impermanence. If we even look out of the window, we see the leaves on the trees are turning yellow, some of them are falling, we see chrysanthemums are in season now. So everything fades, everything passes away, everything is impermanent. If we dwell upon it in this gentle, melancholy sort of fashion, reflectively, poetically, quoting Keats and so on, well, even this will help if these more drastic methods are too terrible for us to face. But one can say, as a result of experience, that even the more drastic method can be intensely exhilarating. It certainly isn't depressing if one takes it up at the right time. It certainly isn't a depressing experience to remind yourself that one day you'll be free of the body. Some people who practice find this very, very exhilarating. I remember once, in my very early days, when I was just beginning as a monk in India, one day I did do this. I went along to a burning ground at night, and I sat there. And it was a very beautiful scene, because it was on the banks of the River Ganges, the great stretch of silver sand, and at intervals, funeral pyres have been lit and people have been burned, and there was a skull here and a bone there and a heap of ashes somewhere else. But it's very beautiful because the moonlight was over it all, the silvery moonlight of the tropics, and the Ganges were gently flowing by, and one felt not only in a contemplative, not only in a detached mood, but one felt in a very free, one might even say exhilarated mood. And it is significant that this sort of practice overcomes fear. It is said that the Buddha himself practiced in this way to overcome fear. If you can stay alone in a graveyard of this sort at night, well, you'll never be afraid of anything again. Because all fear basically is fear of loss of the body, fear of death, fear of loss of self. So if you can come face to face with this and overcome it, or resolve it, or go beyond it, then you'll never be afraid of anything anymore. But this sort of practice, at least in its more drastic forms, is not for beginners. Even in the Buddha's day, we are told that some monks who practiced without proper preparation became so depressed that they committed suicide. So normally one is advised to practice mindfulness of breathing first, then metta, bhavana, and only when one is full of thoughts of metta to go to the graveyard and practice in the more drastic way. But all of us can practice to some extent, recalling the impermanence of things, remembering that one day we too will die, that we too will fade and perish, even as the flowers or even as the grass of the field.